I'm in Georgia.
Oh, okay, Warner
Robins.
Oh. Hey, everyone, it's Joe Crump.
Hey, Joe Crump.
How you guys doing?
Good. Pretty good.
Who's on the call with me today?
Jeff Williams.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Good, Joe, thanks.
Who else is there?
Reggie in Columbus.
Hey, Reggie. Is that Ike?
Hey,
Reggie Ike?
Yep, yes, sir.
Okay. I got another Reggie on the call I had this morning. I got you guys confused.
Dave in Turlock.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing?
Good, thanks. Who else is there? Who else?
This is Connie again.
Hey, Connie. You're in for the long, long haul with me, right?
Yeah, I am.
Good.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Doug in San Diego.
Hey, Doug.
Hi.
Welcome.
This is George Sumrall.
Hey, George.
Hey, Doug. This is Connie. I'm in San Diego, too.
Oh, hi.
Oh, great, man. California. This is great.
Yeah, it's Rob in Castaic.
I don't know. Is that... That's also California, isn't it?
Scott in Columbus, Ohio.
That is California, right?
Wow.
Hey, Scott.
I got some California questions.
Okay. Who else?
George Sumrall from South Florida.
Hey, George.
Clint Myers from Dallas.
Was that Mike?
Clint.
Clint, okay. Anybody I miss yet?
David and Helen, Indianapolis.
Hey, David.
Hi.
Hey, Helen.
Hi, Joe.
You guys couldn't make the earlier call, huh?
Didn't know about it.
No, we just got confused. We thought this was the earlier call. You just
Well, this is...
I'm doing problems.
For those of you who didn't know about the earlier calls, because you're not in the mentor program, some of these guys are in the mentor program, and they also get to come on these calls as well. So, anyway.
It must be good, because they're on the call.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to miss anything.
That's encouraging.
Right.
We had a pretty cool weekend. A lot of neat stuff happened, so. Everybody was out here in Indianapolis, and we did a bunch of new stuff. All right, well, let's get started. Why don't I go through the email questions? I always do that first, and then I'll open up the call so you guys can ask me as many questions as you want, and I'll stay on here for up to an hour and a half, up till 2:30 Central Time, 3:30 Eastern Time, and we'll just answer as many questions as you guys have with your business, and we'll try to get you moving in the right direction. The first one is from Bob Felice, it looks like. Bob, are you on the call? Okay, I'm going to read it because I'm recording this thing, so he's going to be able to listen to it later. Regarding the deal on the high-priced home, and this is about my newsletter, and a comment about assuming the seller would be flexible because he's in foreclosure. This fellow has $75,000 equity. Now, what would make him want to pretty much give some or all of that away in accepting a subject-to deal instead of getting a home equity loan, which would pay his mortgage for almost a year? He enjoys the house, and if he still can't afford the payments next year, then he's open to a subject to for the price of the remaining mortgage. Well, who on the call, anybody on the call want to answer that for me? David, can you answer that question?
Everyone's situation is different. He may not want to keep the house. Everyone's situation is different. Maybe he just wants out from under it, the pressure from it.
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing here is he's saying he's in foreclosure. If he's in foreclosure, that means his payments are late.
Exactly. He can't get home equity.
Right. He's not going to be able to get a mortgage. Now, can he go out? And this depends. I don't remember what price we're talking about here. So are we talking about 10% under market value? If it's a $750,000 property and he's got $75,000 of equity, how much is it going to cost him to sell that property? Going to cost him about that amount to do that. That's if he can get it sold quickly. And if he's already late on his payments, if it's a $750,000 property, he may have $5,000 or $6,000 a month payments. So every month that it takes him to get it sold is another $5,000 or $6,000 that's going down. Now, if you can go in there and let's say he's $10,000 behind on his payments, you get somebody to come in with $20,000 or $30,000 as a lease option fee and bring the thing current and give you that you're going to get the equity. He's not, but he saves his credit or from getting any damaged any worse, and it keeps him from going into foreclosure and saves this situation. If he likes his property and he's got good credit and he wants to stick around in the property, well, that's not the kind of seller we're looking for. We're looking for somebody who's got some pain that we need to solve. If he's just a regular seller, then he doesn't have any pain. He doesn't need our help. And we're only looking for people that we can help. You know, it's taken on this mindset of what the more people I help, the more money I make. That's an old Zig Ziglar thing. But if you're out there and your mindset is focused on helping other people instead of focused on how much money can I make off this guy, you're going to be able to make a lot more money because you're focused on helping others. And that golden rule, that karma, whatever you want to call it, that all comes back. All that good stuff comes back to you. And you stop thinking about how you're going to make money and start thinking about how you can help those people solve their situation using these techniques that I'm teaching you, you're going to be a lot better off. And by the way, anybody who's out there who's making noise on your line, we can hear all that. So if you hit *6, we don't have to listen to you. And you can always hit *6 again and you'll come back in. It unmutes you. So if there's noise in the background or if you're moving around or whatever. So hopefully he has another question here too. It says, it's crucial to know the comps. How do you suggest I obtain them when first starting out? I really don't want to be getting a realtor involved unless he stands to make some money, and the title companies owe me nothing at this point. Not sure if a realtor will do comps for a set fee rather than a commission. Well, if you need comps, a realtor will do them for a set fee. Typically, I'd pay $25 for a realtor that I didn't know to pull me some comps. And the way you would do that is just call any agency in town and ask for the guy on floor. Floor duty is where the guys that don't have much money or much experience are going to be sitting trying to get business as it calls in. They're waiting for business to come in to them. So these guys don't have much money, and an extra $25 will pay their lunch for dinner or whatever, and they'll probably do it, pull it up for you, and you can come pick it up from them, give them $25. That's an easy way to do it. Once you develop a relationship with them, they'll do it whenever you want them to. If you have a friend who will do it, that's great too. But one of the things that I think you're missing here, it's not crucial to have comps if you're doing it the way I'm doing it. And I know this goes against the grain of everything you guys have been taught before, but it's just not important that you have the value of the property all the time, because you're going to find out if that deal makes sense as you're doing the deal. Let me give you an example. Most of the people, most of the teachers that teach real estate that I know teach you to go out, go down to the county recorder, look at the title on a property, go out and look at the property, check the condition, check for the termites, check for the, you know, the water, plumbing, go, you know, have an inspection done. Then they go out and they look at the comps and they look at the value of the comps and they drive around, look at all the comparable properties, see if the value is really there. Then they make an offer. And then maybe, or maybe not, the person's going to say, yeah, I'll take that offer or not. And they've put 2, 3, 4 hours worth of work into this property before they ever made an offer on it. If you're using the system that I'm teaching here, you never have to look at any of that stuff before you make an offer, because your offer is always contingent upon you either finding a tenant or having an investor who wants to buy it. Your offer always has a contingency in it that gives you the right to back out of the deal. So what you do is make the offer, and once they accept it, then you can do your due diligence if you see the need. But a lot of times you don't even need to do it then, because if you put a sign in the yard, there's value just having a sign in the yard, because it's going to bring you buyers. If you put a rent to buy sign in the yard, you're going to build your list of buyers. And one of the things we were talking about over the weekend at the buying event this weekend a lot was building the list. Finding that list and making it bigger and bigger and bigger, because the more buyers you have, the more leverage you have with sellers. That list can be worth more to you than your real estate. I don't think people get their mind around this idea. You need to look at your business as a marketing tool. Everything that you do is based on marketing, and if you build a list of buyers and sellers and investors, you're going to have a powerful tool that you can make money with year after year after year. This is residual income that you'll constantly make money on. And as we go through this process, I'm going to teach you more ways to make money with your list. You know, you can make money with your list by working with realtors. You can make money with your list by working with mortgage brokers. Right now, Helen, let me ask you a couple of questions just real quick, because I know you're working on building a pretty big list. Are you muted in? Can you hear me? Hit *6 if you're...
I'm here, Joe.
Okay. How many people have you got, and this I asked you this at the event as well, but I'm going to ask you here now. How many people have you got on your buyer's list right now?
We have probably over 100.
Okay.
It's really improved this weekend also.
Excellent. Excellent. So and you're getting all these coming from signs, correct?
They're coming from signs. Been very effective with, signs. But as far as pulling in sellers, we're doing the expired listings also.
Okay, great. So you've got these buyers coming in, and then what do you do with them after you get them?
We put them through the so-called pipeline. We call up the mortgage broker. If they're really serious, they want to start working on improving their credit, so we hand over the information to our mortgage broker and let him start the process of qualifying them.
Now, the people, just for you guys that are on the line, the people that are calling in, most of them do not qualify for a loan. That's why they're calling on a rent-to-buy sign. They don't qualify. But we find that about 10% of them do qualify for a loan right now, even though they think they have bad credit. And they'll tell you, oh, I've got bad credit, I won't qualify for a loan. But then when they run them through the process, they find out, hey, they do qualify. It's been 2 years since their bankruptcy. They've reestablished. They've got enough income. They can qualify for a loan. Now, the thing that we're doing with these people now, we want to optimize our list. How can we make more money with them? Well, first of all, we can get a cut off what the mortgage broker's making, and he can give us some money, and we can send them to a real estate agent, because now that they can afford a property, now that they can buy a property, they can go buy any property on the market. So why not give them to a real estate agent and have that real estate agent give us a cut on the commission? Just last month, one of my people got $12,000 in real estate commissions alone from buyers that he sent over to him. Just in commissions. This has nothing to do with his business. So these are things that you can do as well. You can get money from these other sources. And those are the things that we're working on and how to develop those that process. And putting them through the pipeline like Helen's talking about. I mean, you've just been doing this for a few weeks. How long have you been trying to get buyers?
Probably the last 4 weeks.
4 weeks, 100 people in 4 weeks.
Oh, we've done that off signs out the front of our house and a couple of signs on one major street. So 4 or 5 signs have brought all this business.
Right. Now, it's going to be different in different areas, and where you put the sign makes a difference. If you have a higher traffic area, that's going to make a difference. And some places you're going to get a flood of calls. Nina's getting 48 calls a day on her signs and on the stuff that she's got. And she's not even putting signs in any place that's not her own property. She's just got so many houses and she puts signs in them all. So if you own property, you ought to put signs in the yard whether or not you're selling that property or not. David and Helen are putting signs in their own front yard. And then they're taking those people and putting them on a list. And as they put together new deals, then they can sell those properties to the people that are on the list. You can get those people also, you can get those buyers out there looking for properties, looking for their own properties. You say, hey, go find for sale by owner, go find expired listings, go find for rent listings, landlord listings, and you bring them back to me and I'll put together a lease option deal for you. And, you know, if you bring me back 2 or 3 of them, there's a very good chance I'll be able to put one of them together. Having a buyer that wants a specific home, if you went to a for sale by owner, there's a good portion of them, and you have a buyer that says, I want this property, will you sell it to me a rent to buy, give me 1 year to pay you, and I'll give you full price, and you won't have to go to a real estate agent because you're having a hard time selling it for sale by owner. Would they accept that? The answer is yes, many of them will accept it. So that's a really cool thing. So it's all about building these lists. It's about finding out how much work you need to do. It's about finding out the work that you do. It's discovering the work that you do that actually makes you money. The only money that you make in these is putting together the deals and building your list and then farming out some of the work and taking the money in. If you're just getting started, the main money that you want to go after is putting the deals together. Finding those sellers, finding those landlords, finding those for sale by owners, finding the motivated sellers, and getting their properties under contract so you can turn around and either flip it or you can keep it and sell it on a lease option if you buy it subject to. Okay, the next question is from Robin Hunter. Robin, did you make the call? Are you on the call? And you have to press star 6 to get back in if you muted yourself out. I'm going to read her email, and interrupt me if you're on the line. I'm a flight attendant who will be just getting on an airplane during the call, so I may not be on the call. Here's my question. How to salvage a mistake. I did a 1031 exchange on a $120,000 property into a new property priced at $450. I was told when I bought it that rent would be $220. I did not do the research myself, and rents don't go above $1,500 or $1,600, so I want to do a lease option. But I'm not sure how to price it and what to ask to put down. Here are the numbers. $450,000 is worth about $470 to $495. It's got a new loan of $320. The payments are $1,800. Thinking about offering a lease option for $545 with $6,300 down and rent at $2,100. Should I credit $100 toward their purchase price? I have an agent who put it on her MLS for a rental or lease option. I'm an out-of-towner. She's charging me 4.5%. Not sure how that commission will work with a lease option. Do you think someone will go for that deal? Does it sound like a reasonable deal? Should I advertise the rent to buy? Okay, let's take a look at the deal. $450, you're paying $450 for it. You've got payments on it of $1,831. You're gonna, it's worth $495. You can probably get more on a rent to buy. I'd try to get at least 5.25 for it. $545 wouldn't be outrageous. Don't advertise the down payment. Put it on a market. Find out what people have when they come. If they've got $5,000, does it make sense to close this deal with $5,000 if you've got $30,000 or $40,000 on the back end, $70,000 on the back end? Absolutely, it does. If you want to try to get more, though, if they come and tell you, I've got $10,000, you want to ask them, well, could you come up with $15,000? I could make this work if you had $15,000. If they tell you they've got $4,000, tell them, well, if you could come up with $6,000, I could make this work with $6,000. But would it make sense still to do it with $4,000? Probably. You got to look at can they come up with the monthly payment. And if they can come up with that monthly payment, then it makes sense. Now let's look at the monthly payment. Say rents don't go above $1,500, $1,600, but you got payments on it of $1,800. So how do you get this $1,800 a month payment, or can you get more than that? You want to get at least your payment, obviously. You want to try to make a couple hundred dollars a month on top of that if you can. So let's say you put it on the market and it's $2,000. You make it for $2,000 a month. It's above market rent by $400 or $500 a month. Will anybody pay that? I believe, and I have experience that says yes, they will do that. And the reason is because the way you frame it for them. What you do is say, well, the payment on a $425,000 property is going to be X dollars, which is going to be, by the way, more than $2,200. So if you can't afford the payment on this type of property, you need to be buying a property that's less expensive. You're not renting from me. What you're doing is buying. Here's what your mortgage is going to be when you refinance that property and take it off. And you don't want to rent it to them for a whole lot less, because it won't make sense to them to buy it from you later, because their payment shoots way up. So you want to rent it to them. You lease option it to them at a payment that's going to be equivalent or maybe a little bit more than what their mortgage is, so that later when they go refinance it, it'll actually be attractive to them to refinance it and take out the payment so that they can have a lower payment. So you want to try to get the payment even higher than what they would normally pay. So yes, I think that's not going to be a problem for you. Now get rid of the agent. You don't need an agent in this situation. There are things that you can do with an agent and use an agent for, but you're going to be able to find a lease option buyer without an agent. Get a sign in the yard. Get a sign in the neighborhood and start. Just put up rent to buy, no qualifying, and then put a phone number on there. If you've got my stupid proof CDs, you've got a script that you can put on the. You've got a script that you can use for your voicemail that qualifies the voicemail people. And on this one, you're going to want to raise the down payment prices a little bit from what I've got on that script. But you can use that script and people will pre-qualify themselves. They'll find out what the benefits are of leaving their name and number with you. And you can start building this list. And make sure you get their name and email address and phone number at the very least. Try to get their address as well. But we've been kind of playing with this idea, and we're finding that name, address, and email, or name, phone number, and email address is enough. If you can get that, you can usually get their mailing address later by either phoning them or emailing them. So try to get that, because if you get too much, then they forget to give you everything, and it's hard to understand them. Make sure to tell them to spell any difficult words and difficult names, and speak clearly, because it's sometimes you'll lose deals. We've been setting up websites to have people, so we can send people to the website. Right now we've got wewillbuy.com, which is where you can send your sellers, but I'm working on a couple other websites, which hopefully I'm going to have in the next few months, that you guys can get into if you want to, that we're going to have a site where we can drive traffic. You can also have an autoresponder that does a follow-up process to get them into this process. So this is going to be something that's coming up here in the future, and I'm going to roll it out first to the people that are in the mentor program, but so for those of you who are interested in doing that, you might want to think about being involved in this group, because there's some really interesting things that are happening. They're really on the cutting edge of what we're doing, and they're testing things. I throw out an idea, or somebody in the group will throw out an idea, and some of the students will go out and they'll test it and see how it works, and they'll find out where the problems are, and we learn how where the problems are in these new ideas so much faster, and everybody starts thinking so much more creatively. So it's great to have this type of mastermind group. Anyway, hopefully that helps you, Robin. I don't think you've made a mistake here. The only mistake that you made is it sounds like you bought this property and you put down payment on it. That's the biggest mistake that you've made. Don't ever do that. Don't ever put money down on a property. The 1031 exchange, that was a great idea. I'm glad you did that. It'll save you money on the taxes. You won't have to pay the capital gains on the property that you sold. Hopefully everybody will do that on their properties as long as you hold them for a year. If you're just flipping them and it's less than a year and a day, you can't do a 1031. But if you've held them for a year and a day, then you can do a 1031 exchange, and you don't have to pay taxes on any of that. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next email is from Neil Lewis. Neil, are you on the call? He says, I live about 30 miles north of Chicago. I'll have to drive 30 to 40 miles to get to newer construction single-family homes that cost less than $200,000. Around here, everything new seems to go up in price by 5 or 10% a year. If I'm trying to buy a 2 to 5 year old house, it seems to me that it'll be difficult to find motivated sellers because they'll have benefited from the appreciation. Do you have a technique that might work in this market? Also, let's say I'm lease optioning one. Instead of $5,000 moves yen, would I say 10,000 moves yen because that's 5% of the purchase price? I won't be on the call because I have a work meeting that I have to be on. First of all, that Chicago market is an incredibly hot market for what we're doing. I've got Jim Drails up there. You guys that were at the event over the weekend know what kind of stuff he's doing. He's got 20 homes right now that he's moving, that he's got on the market that he's selling, he just got on the market in the past week. So Chicago, and he's in Aurora, so he's not far from you at all. And these are properties that are, most of them are over $200,000. They don't have to be new construction. They can be 10 years old. They can be ugly homes. I'm sorry if you got the impression that they're only supposed to be 2 to 5 years old. I'm saying you can do that with new construction, and it does work. And there's plenty of those available, too, by the way, even in these types of markets. Just because they go up 5 or 10% a year, that's not a highly appreciating market. A highly appreciating market is 20% a month, which is some of the stuff that's happening, like in Phoenix and some places in Florida are doing some of that. In some places in California are doing that. Those are incredible markets, and they're a different animal and working different. But you're living in Chicago; it's not that different than where we're dealing with here in Indiana. So I don't think you need to worry about that. Also, as far as the down payment, don't put the down payment on how much it moves you in. Say rent to buy. You can put the monthly payment, but don't put the down payment. But no qualifying, and then ask them how much they've got for a down payment. And like I said before, negotiate a higher price from whatever they've got and try to get more money from them. Make sure they've got enough. But you've got to look at the deal and decide whether or not that deal makes sense to you at the price that you're suggesting. And if it makes sense to make $2,000, if you're going to make $50,000 on the back end, or if you're making $20,000 on the back end, does it make sense to make $2,000 now and make $20,000 a year from now? Well, most of the time it does. So you have to make that decision for yourself. Or you could wait and find another buyer, because there's a lot of buyers out there. Okay, the next email is from Clint Myers. Clint, I heard you on the call. I know you're there. Still with us? Clint?
I'm here.
Okay, okay. Do you want me to read this, or do you want to tell me your question?
Well, it was kind of two different questions. And one, I just didn't quite understand the paperwork and which contracts go with at what point with the buyer and which ones go with the seller. And I'm like, I'm ready to do it, but I just don't got this straight in my head, I guess.
Well, what type of deal are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the rent to own.
Okay.
I'm going to start with that because my girlfriend will not allow me to do anything until I make some money with this.
Okay. Smart girl. And you know, that's my philosophy too. It's not that you're not going to do anything. It's that you're not going to take any risks. And that's what she's
right.
feeling too. And I know probably most of you on this call have either spouses or family members or friends or somebody who think you're a complete idiot because you're trying this stuff and that it's wild and it's out of, it's crazy. That's why you need to come to places like this, because you're going to hear a bunch of people that are normal people that are doing this kind of stuff, that are making it work, and it is safe if you do it the right way. If you go out there and put 10% down, which I think probably Robin did when she bought that $450,000 property, she probably put a down payment on it, she probably got a new loan, had used her credit. This is a mistake. Don't do that again. And I'm not beating you up, Robin, but I'm just telling you, don't do that again. It's not necessary. You never have to use your credit to do this process. Now, I'm not saying that sometime in the future you won't find value in using your credit. You won't find value in doing some deals a different way, because there's other ways to make money in real estate. But learn it this way, where there is no risk, where you don't have to take a hit, where you don't have to take a fall, where you never damage your credit, where you'll never lose any money, except all you'll lose is your time. And if you structure it the right way, that's the way this'll work. So you're not talking about rent to own. You're not talking about buying on a rent to own. You're talking about doing talking to landlords, correct?
Right.
Okay. So you're going to go talk to a landlord. You're going to get the lease option memo. You're going to you're going to assign that lease option to a new buyer. So you're going to be the principal in the transaction. You're not going to be a real estate agent. You're not going to be acting as an agent representing them. The contracts that you need to do that are first, and you're only going to have it for you guys probably won't have this unless you've bought the stupid proof set. And you can create these contracts if you don't want to buy the stupid proof set. You can have an attorney do it for you if you want to. So I'm going to tell you what they are and how they work. One is the first contract you need is just the one-page lease option memo that I wrote. It makes it very easy for them to sign because it gives them lots of outs, lots of things to do. But it also gives you the right to turn around and resell that property or resell that option to someone else for a fee. You can assign it for a fee. And you have an option to buy a property at a specific price. And let's take a property, say it's $150,000. You found a property, he wants to sell it for $150,000, and let's say it's worth $150,000. Now what you're going to do, you got him to sign it, you're going to put a yard sign in, rent to buy, no qualifying phone number. That's the basic sign. There's other signs that we use to tweak that process that sometimes get better response, but that's a good sign and it'll work. Make sure it's an ugly sign. Handwrite it on yellow core plaster, on yellow cardboard. Make it ugly. It'll stand out. Sellers don't always like that, but they'll quit complaining when they see you sell the property quickly. So now you've got the sign in the yard. You've got a buyer that comes in. He says, I want to buy this property. I'm going to buy it rent to buy. I'm going to give you $5,000 as a lease option fee. That's how much I've got up front. And I'm going to buy the property for $155,000. That's how much you're selling it for now. Not $150,000, $155,000, because you want to put your lease option fee on top of that. So now the seller's still getting his $150,000. You're getting $5,000 from the buyer. And you're going to write a new contract up for this buyer. It's a purchase agreement. It's $155,000. And like I said, if you've got the stupid proof stuff, you've got this. All these forms are already filled out for you. But basically, it's a purchase agreement that's $155,000 that also shows that $5,000 was paid as an assignment fee to you, the investor, who assigned this deal to them for $5,000. And that $5,000 applies to the purchase price, so now they owe $150,000. You also, in addition to that purchase agreement, you're going to need an option agreement. That's a separate form. It just says you have the right to buy this property in X amount of months or years or days or whatever at this price. And you're paid this much as a lease option fee, and which is non-refundable, which is that $5,000. So now you've got those two forms. You also have to have a lease agreement, and we use a special lease agreement because I want that buyer to be responsible for the property. So if the furnace goes out, yeah, whoever's talking in the background, if you could just press *6, that would help us. Oh, that's not somebody talking. That's an advertisement.
Please press 1.
Somebody put us on hold, probably.
Enter your card number.
Whoever's pressing their card number in right now, put us on *6. Okay, I lost my place. Where was it? Okay, you need the lease. I'm going to try to talk over this. So, you need the lease agreement, which is an agreement that makes the landlord makes the buyer responsible to take care of that property, even changing roofs, furnaces, unstopping the toilet, anything. So the landlord doesn't have to do that work anymore. And you tell that person, say, look, I'm going to treat you like a buyer. You know, if you had a loan from Countrywide and your furnace goes out, do you call Countrywide up and say, hey, you got to come fix my furnace? Well, you're going to treat me the same way. I'm your lender now. I'm not your landlord, even though technically you are. But that's the way you're going to treat them, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to take care of that property. So it takes a lot of weight off your shoulders, and it puts them in control, and it makes you less of a landlord and makes you have to worry about those headaches a lot less. So that's a wonderful thing to have. You're also going to want to have a disclosure. I've got a disclosure, once again, in my program, and I keep changing it and keep adding stuff to it. But you guys, if you've got the stupid proof, you've got a good basic disclosure. And the things that you're disclosing are going to be things like they've checked the title, and they're comfortable with the title, that you haven't checked the title. And in fact, you're not guaranteeing or warranting the title at all. And in fact, that if they haven't checked it, they better check it before they close the deal. Same with the price of the property and the value of the property, that you haven't checked the comps, that they are relying on their own estimation of the value. And same with the condition, that you haven't checked the condition. In fact, you may not have even seen the property, and they're relying on their own estimation of the value, and they've had the opportunity to have it inspected if they choose to. And they're not relying on you. That also you're not acting as an agent, that you don't represent them. Also that they understand that there's a due on sale clause on this property, and that they've made themselves comfortable with that idea, and that if they have any questions about it, that they've talked to their attorney. So those are some basics that are on the disclosure form. So those are the forms that you need to make that deal work. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, Joe, that sounds pretty good. So the only thing we do with the landlord is do the lease option memo and a purchase agreement for the $150?
No, you don't need a purchase agreement. Just do the lease option memo.
That's it for the buyer.
That's it. That's it for you as the buyer. Now, when you transfer it to the new buyer, that's when you create all that other document I just talked about.
Okay. That's what I wasn't 100% sure about.
That's what makes it so easy for them to sign. You know, there's just no risk to them at all. But when it finally comes to actually putting the deal together, you've got to have a more solid contract. But even that contract is more favorable to the seller than to the buyer. Don't you guys buy on a lease option. There's no reason for you to buy on a lease option. It's not very safe. It's not safe enough for you to do it. But it makes a lot of sense for people to buy it from another landlord on a lease option. If you're going to buy it, you want to do subject to. Here's the hierarchy. Subject to, multiple mortgage, land contract, lease option. If you can't get it on subject to, go to a multiple mortgage. If you can't get it on multiple mortgage, go to a land contract. If you can't get it on a land contract, then you can go to a lease option. Only then. And only if it makes sense. And don't count on it closing. Make sure you're getting money out front on these deals.
Okay, Joe, my other question was about being in Texas and how they're a little bit more strict on the forms that we use.
Well, you use local forms if you can, but or take your form to an attorney and ask them if you can use it, and that way you'll know for sure.
Okay.
If you're a realtor, you've got to use certain forms. If you're not a realtor, they don't force you to use any forms. You can do a transaction in any state without a purchase agreement. So they're not going to make you use a specific form. Now,
okay.
Now, if you're a real estate agent, they have specific forms they want you to use. They require disclosures. They require mold, junk, you know, lead paint stuff, all sorts of things. And maybe it doesn't hurt to use those things. If you have a realtor who's a friend, track some of them down. Use the local stuff. It's also kind of nice sometimes because everybody understands that stuff. Everybody recognizes it. And that makes it a little bit easier than using those contracts. But I put some special verbiage in my contracts, and I like to use them because of that stuff.
One other thing that Nina had talked about was being real firm on that eviction date, being the 6th of the month.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you don't have that in your lease agreement.
Which lease agreement are you talking about?
The one to the lease option tenant.
Okay. Well, add it in. I think it makes sense, too. It's just you probably have one that's older. So add it in. Oh. Add it into the agreement.
Do we have to worry about laws regarding that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, I have a $40 a day late fee on properties that are $150,000. And it's probably not enforceable. And a lot of times I'll let my people slide on the late fees. If they're, you know, a couple of days late and I know that what's happening, I'll let them slide. And I'll tell them, if you do it next month, I'm going to charge you, you know, and there's not, I'm not ever going to do this again for you. And they're going to think I'm just a great guy because I just gave them, you know, $120 or $180. Sometimes I charge them and I take the money. And sometimes they know it and they just send me the money. I'll say, hey, I'm going to be 2 days late. I'll give you the fee. I've never had anybody contest my late fee before. But it's possible that that can happen if they take you to court. So if they take you to court, then will it be something you can hold up in court? Maybe not. But there's no guarantee, yes or no. They may not even contest it.
Okay.
I feel that you ask for what you want, and then you see if you have to hold it up in court or not. Some people's philosophy is only ask what you can hold up in court. That way, it'll be solid. But the whole goal, when you go to court, the only thing you want at that point is to get rid of those people. That's the only thing you want. I mean, it'd be nice to be able to get a judgment or whatever, but the likelihood you're going to be able to collect that money is a little pretty low. And it's better that you just get on with your life. And if you can get them out of your house, that's the best thing. Sometimes it even makes sense to pay people to leave. You got to look at the economics of it. You know, it may just irritate the heck out of you to say, okay, I'm going to give these people $500 just so they'll leave, but it may cost you another $1,000 or $2,000 if you take them to court. So
right.
You have to decide which makes, you know, which is going to cost you the most.
Does that
answer it?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. The next one is from Jim Jasper, next email here. He's in the Phoenix market, unbelievable seller's market. Yeah, that's the truth. I'm not inclined to bet on the come, expecting appreciation to cover overpaying. But my usual marketing has been very ineffective. What adjustments do you recommend I make to my business to buy more properties at good margins? My leads here are essentially non-existent. Well, in Phoenix, there's 10 or 15 properties a day that are coming on the market that are had a notice of default filed on them. Those properties are potentials for you. The problem is you got to develop a relationship with these people, and there's a lot of people that out there that are teaching how to do foreclosure deals and how to screw around with that stuff. You can get most of this stuff online, by the way, these listings. This could be a very interesting market to do this, though, because if you can develop a way to connect with these people, that they'll talk to you, that they'll listen to you, you'll be doing good. First of all, you want to track down a phone number if at all possible. So get the crisscross directory and try to call them. But you may have to go knock on their door. I mean, this is probably the most effective way of making that work, by knocking on the door. But that's a lot of work and it's not much fun. But I'll tell you can get some unbelievable deals. You know, get properties out there. I mean, the average property out there is what, $250,000 or $300,000, something like that. You can get properties that are $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 under market value. Why they're not selling them on the market, I don't know. Why they're not just putting them on a listing, but they're not. They're going into notice of default. And you can go work with those people. And one of the things you can do is you can go, you can offer to bring their payments current. If you're going to do that, and that'll get their attention, by the way. Now, you may not want to do it, because you have to look at the deal and decide whether or not it makes sense to put money into that deal. And by the way, if you do bring their payments current, have them deed you the property and then lease option it back to them, and then let them buy it back from you after they pay off the loan. And if they don't pay off the loan, then they have to leave the house, and you can turn around and sell it. So there's some good things there, and you can charge them a lot of money for that loan because it's hard money. So you charge them maybe 15% for the interest and 10 points for the loan, 10% interest for the loan. So there's some really cool things you can do there to make that stuff happen. You can also put together buyer's lists. When you have a buyer's list, when you start talking to these sellers and you start talking to landlords, you're going to have a lot more leverage. You know, you can, when you're talking to landlords, and there's plenty of people that are keeping properties for the appreciation in these areas, and they're just buying them on spec and they're trying to find people to rent them. Well, they'd be happy to do a lease option if you can get them more than current market rent, which you can do in these areas because there's a lot of people that are lease optioning that are be willing to pay an extra $50,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 for a property. You know, agree to that price right now on a lease option because they know the market's appreciating, and even at that price, it'll still be a deal to them. And if it doesn't go up to that amount, or over that amount, then they don't they just don't close the deal later on. So there's ways to do it that way as well. So hopefully that answers a few of those questions. There's a lot more stuff that you can do in these markets, and this goes for markets in California, and not all California is this hot, but Arizona right now, this Phoenix market is one of the most amazing markets around right now. So anyway, hopefully that answers that question. The next question is from Rob Eisenhower. He's one of the mentor guys. Rob, are you on the call? Oh, he's asking me. It's not really a question, just wondering what happened to the May 14th event. Wish I could have gone. Couldn't free up the time. Well, we did a lot of stuff on that event. We talked about doing voicemail blasts to landlords. We talked about doing voicemail blasts to for sale by owners. Talked about doing generating leads with emails to for sale by owners. You know, using this internet technology, finding these leads online, looking at newspapers online, and pulling out phone numbers from the classified ads, looking at for rent ads online, you know, at for rent websites, at for sale by owner websites, and using those. We talked a little bit about talking to real estate agents and tracking down real estate agents from online sources. A lot of good stuff like that. So we'll be talking about more of that stuff as the weeks go on, and you'll be seeing, hopefully you can come on some of the other calls we've got, and we'll be able to see some of the other stuff that's cooking. And for you guys that are in the newsletter, I'll be talking about some of that stuff in the weeks to come and the months to come in the newsletter. But you might want to, you know, a lot of this stuff that we're doing is more advanced than maybe where you're at right now if you're just getting my newsletter. The newsletter is mainly geared to just getting you over the hump of getting your first deals done and getting that stuff going. And I hate to get too advanced with the process because you won't have the support or understanding of how to do it, because it sometimes takes a few times to really understand that. So we're kind of putting this stuff as we go. All right, the next email is from Larry Maddox. Larry, are you on the call? Okay. He says there's no monthly resource material on this last one. What did I do as a resource material on the last e-letter or the last newsletter? I did something. Can't remember off the top of my head. What did I give you guys? Well, I can't remember off the top of my head. Anyway, it's there.
Our listing letter.
What was it?
The expired listings letter.
Oh yeah, and that's awesome. That thing is pulling, you know, that letter will pull about 8 to 10% response everywhere in the country we've run it. That was written by one of my mentor students, Steve Barcell, and it's been an awesome response. So anyway, well, that's the last email that I've got. Let's open the call up to questions. Who's got a question for me? And just press *6 if you need to talk.
I got a question for you.
Okay, who's this?
This is Dave in Turlock.
In
a little hot market here.
Where are you, Dave?
In Turlock, California.
Okay.
The San Joaquin Valley.
Okay.
And there's a lot of investment from out of town coming here. So, the houses don't sit too long. but I'm trying to find a gun to your head, you know, do or die a method of trying to attract motivated sellers in a market like that. So if you were given an assignment such as that, you would have to be successful or you would die. What method in detail would you use to try to bring motivated sellers to you? And you would have the funds, let's say, for the marketing investment to be able to produce, let's say, an automated system that would, you know, bring you, you know, at a nice pace, motivated sellers. What would you do, Joe?
Well, I go back and listen to what I was just talking about earlier, because that's what I was talking about in Phoenix. It's the same kind of market as what you've got, and dealing with that type of list, that's one of the places I'd start. I'd also be sending each one of those guys a FedEx letter and telling them, here's what I've got available, you know, here's what's possible, and get their attention. If you send them just a piece of mail, they'll never listen to it or never open it. It's got to be something. Whenever you're approaching a seller, find what they need the most. Remember, these guys that are going in default, they're getting called by everybody, because everybody wants those properties. So that's hitting public record. Everybody's calling them at once. What can you do to set yourself apart?
Okay, so what you're saying is to send them a FedEx, get their attention, and then try to build at all costs in a relationship with them to see if you can find a way to help them.
Right.
And so that would be your gun-to-the-head method. That would be, you would feel comfortable that you won't die from that.
Well, if I got a gun to my head, I'm going to do more than one thing.
All right, what would be the next thing you would do?
I would be trying everything, first of all.
Well, be realistic. You're only one guy. I'm not Joe Crump. I'm just one guy. What would that one guy like me do?
Well, the next thing I think I would be working, I'd be talking to the landlords. That's a very powerful thing to do, and I'd be talking to every FSBO. Because FSBOs, why are FSBOs selling FSBO?
Excuse me?
Why do FSBOs sell for sale by owner?
They want to save the commission.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right. They don't have the equity in the house, and they've got to sell it anyway.
So there's two reasons, right? Need.
Over here, that just does. The houses rise quick enough to where most people have equity even after a couple of months.
Okay, so they've got two reasons. Need, which you're saying they don't have, and some of them do have that, by the way, because they've got other things in their life that create that problem.
Okay, so
they may be getting a divorce, or maybe ignorance, or maybe other problems. They just don't want to deal with it. It's amazing what people will walk away from. It's just amazing. Hmm. That's why you can have a market where properties go up 20% a month and still have 15 houses a month a day going into the notice of default. That's how that can happen, because there's people that are just, their lives are screwed up and they need help. And that's how you can solve them. So you got need or you got greed. And greed is the other thing. They don't want to pay that commission, like you said. And if they don't want to pay that commission, how can they do that? If they can't get it sold on their own, maybe it's an easy market and they can turn around and sell it on their own, or maybe they don't have the ability to do that. Maybe they don't understand that process, and you can do it for them by doing a lease option and doing a flip that way. So you got to find those people that you can help. You're not just trying to talk people into doing it your way. You're trying to find people that have a need.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Oh, I think that you really cleared up, the chaff from the wheat here. So I appreciate your help.
Yeah, I think there's so much garbage out there. So many supposed opportunities. You know, the very first house I ever made money on was in California, in Lancaster, California, in 1986, and that was the first house I ever bought. And the day that it closed, it went up. It had gone up 20%. It was new construction. It had gone up 20%. I turned around, I sold it immediately, and I made money. And I thought, wow, I'm really smart. When what I was really lucky. And I continued to build my business on that for several years, and bought $17-18 million worth of property, and then when I got caught in the crash, and I lost everything, so I had to start over again. But I bought the wrong way. I didn't buy in a safe way, and I'm not saying that you can't make money in these markets like that. You can, and you can do it by risking a lot. And one of my guys that was at the event is buying stuff in Phoenix right now. And he's buying a bunch of properties, and he's making $100,000 a month on all these properties that he owns just because of the appreciation that's going up. And as long as they keep going up, he's going to keep making money. When they start going down, then he'll start losing money, and he could potentially lose everything he gained. So my advice to him was, right now, sell at least one of those properties and get out the money that you have in there. Because he could sell one property right now and get his money out. And he can pull his money out, and now he's back to zero again.
Playing for free.
Right. Now, when he loses, the only thing that's going to be damaged is his credit, which is no nice thing either. But he's riding a wild horse, and it may work and it may not. If it works, he looks like he's going to win big, and it's going to be very cool. If it doesn't work, then he's going to lose big. And that's the way with any type of investment. The higher the risk, the higher potential for gain.
Whether you're in and out with your system, you minimize all that risk.
Yeah, there's no risk with what I'm doing.
Right.
And even in those markets, and I told him, I basically told him the same thing that I just told you guys about how to structure his deals and how to work with these people and stop taking out loans and stop putting on down payments. Now, it'll make, if he buys these properties under market value and he loans them the money to bring their mortgages current, as long as he has the deed to the property and they're substantially under market value to start with, the likelihood that they're going, 30% or more under market value, that they're going to drop that much, is pretty low. The likelihood that he's going to get his money back is pretty high, and he doesn't have his name on any credit. That's where he should be. Those would be really sweet deals, rather than buying them for full market value. And he's buying some stuff for, he's doing new construction too, which appreciates while it's being built, so you don't actually have to pay for it for 3 or 4 months after you buy it. So it appreciates for 3 months before you even buy it. And with that kind of market, it's amazing on the stuff that's happening. And for all you guys that are salivating over this stuff, don't. Learn how to do this stuff, make money the other way, and then you'll be comfortable to go to this other methods. And even for what you're talking about, you might want to look at some other markets. Might want to look at some markets that you can do this, because you can do what we're teaching anywhere in the country. Ozum's been doing a bunch of stuff. He's in Indianapolis. He's been doing a bunch of stuff in Ohio. They're not seeing any of those properties. They're working with real estate agents. They're working with mortgage brokers. They got people, they hire to put signs in the yards. They've got it all handled. And he's been expanding out into different parts of the country, so he doesn't have to go there. You don't have to be in these places. You don't ever have to see these properties to do these deals.
I have a question about structuring, if possible.
Okay, who's this? Who's this?
This is Ilona.
Hey, Ilona, how you doing?
Hi. Thank you very much for sending me this in the last minute the phone numbers.
Yeah, I actually sent them yesterday. I don't know why they didn't get to you.
Okay, they are here now.
Okay.
And my question is the following. I would like to structure the following deal. It's going to happen on Thursday. The seller is willing to finance a building for $340,000 or he's willing to give it for $300,000 if he gets paid in cash.
What's it worth?
I think that it's probably worth about $600,000. The problem is it's environmentally contaminated.
In what way?
Everyone kind of ran away from him when he showed them. There's some chromium.
Okay.
The thing is, I have a seller who loves environmentally contaminated properties because that's their specialty. So
okay.
I really want to tie up that property. My problem is the following. The person who brought me the deal, he wants to stay in the deal as an owner and, keep on waiting. And I would like to sort of, I don't know how to structure it with him. I would like to have him come back to me and bring me new deals. So I don't want to cut him out, but at the same time, I don't know whether I should share, some ownership with him, or I shouldn't share any ownership with him, or what should I do with this person?
Don't be a partner. No partners. Never partner with your buyers or sellers. Just don't do that. You'll thank me. If you ever do it, you'll regret it.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that you can't joint venture and they can't both make money. You just don't want
to.
You don't want a joint ownership of the property where somebody else has control over your decisions.
Okay.
You never want to have somebody else have control over your business decisions. Don't let that happen. That's why.
Yeah, I had some feelings about it. Okay.
Yeah. So in this deal, you've got a buyer, and what's he willing to pay? What's the buyer willing to pay for this property?
I don't know yet, but I think that they would be willing to pay anything between $450 to $550.
Okay.
And it's a fund, actually. I have some relationships with them.
And can they pay cash?
I do think so.
Okay. So there's two ways you can do this. One is it would make the most sense, probably, to write it up as a purchase agreement, as a cash purchase. The guy said the seller said he's willing to take $300,000, right?
Yep.
So just write it up as a cash purchase to close in 90 days and have it assignable.
Yep.
So now you can go assign it to this other guy and get $50,000 or $100,000 or $150,000 or whatever it is you can get from him.
Depends, yeah. Okay.
You know, on this deal. You know, if you only made $25,000 on it, would it be worth it?
Yeah, because the issue is that I don't have the money to do the due diligence, but they would have the money to do that.
You just don't close it. You've got if they come in and do the due diligence and find out that it's going to cost $600,000 to clean up the mess, they're not going to close it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to close it because you've got a contingency on there that says this is contingent upon approval by my investor.
What do I do with the person who brought me the deal, who is not the seller, but just the person who just bumped into this property? He wants to probably get some money out of it, too, and he's my problem. I don't want to go around him.
Well, give him
so
a piece. Absolutely. Give him, you know, you guys decide that. Say, well, do you have an agreement with him how much you'll give him whenever he brings you a deal?
No, but that's why I'm calling. Do you have any experience what's worse, or how could I motivate him to keep on coming back to me with such deals?
Well, I think if you gave him, you know, it depends on the situation. I don't use bird dogs, is what we'd call this guy, a bird dog. He's out there looking for properties for you. But if he's finding properties, there's no reason not to pay him, especially if he can find properties that are this much under market value.
Mm.
Because this is an attractive property. So, you know, cut him in at a good chunk. You know, but if somebody just, a lot of times I'll get referrals of properties. Hey, I got somebody over here that has a property, and I'll give him $500 as a referral. You know, maybe we only made $5,000 on it or $10,000 on the property, and we give him $500. So if you gave him a small percentage, you know, give him at least if you're making $50,000, you might want to give him $10,000 or $15,000.
Okay.
You know, if you're making $10,000, you might want to give him $1,000 or $2,000. If you're making $5,000, you might want to give him $500. Give him 10%, 10-20%. You make the decision and you negotiate, depending on your relationship with that person, whether or not you think they'll bring the stuff back, and whether or not you have a previous agreement with them. Because they may, you know, if they're feeling like you're cheating them by only giving them 10%, then you have to decide whether it makes sense to go ahead and give them more money and hope that they'll give you more deals in the future.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, alienate them and keep them from working with you in the future. And that would be your call at that point.
But don't partner with that kind of person, because then I would lose the decision-making ability, right?
Correct.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you so much.
Now, you can say, look, if you bring me somebody, I'll give you X amount of dollars. You know, or I'll give you this percentage of what I take out of it, out of the upfront money. Because you may get into situations where you have front money and back money.
Okay.
Coming out when you close, and money if you're keeping the property when you get on the back end, when somebody finally purchases it. So only give them percentages of the front end money, not the back end. You don't want to have to worry about paying them later or having them on title somehow that they're entitled to part of this money. Because they could force a sale if they have an interest in the property. And you don't want them you don't want them to be in a position to do that.
I don't want. Yeah, that's true.
Does that help? Does that make it clear?
It helped a lot. It really helped.
So you know,
thank you so much.
This is a good deal. You know what to go. You know what to do now, right?
Yep, I have the agreement. I'm gonna just, you know, and I don't lose anything if I don't. I try another one.
Exactly. And do you know how much it's going to cost to have this chromium removed?
I do not know, but I know that the city wants it to be clean, so I would guess that, you know what, even if it costs a lot of money, the buyer, whoever cleans it up, will probably make a killing on it.
Yeah, those type of properties, they are worth a fortune.
Okay.
Those are really, you gotta, whenever you come across something like that, or a property that's got a foundation problem, or you know, that's got or like an old gas station, or you know, all those things, man, you can make a lot of money off of those.
Do you ever sell and lease back, I mean option back, whatever you have sold? So sell it, for example, to someone who can clean it up but make it so that you can buy it back in 5 years from them?
Well,
if they're willing to do that, right?
Right. I think that you're not going to have much value. If they're going to fix it up, they're going to charge you a certain amount to do that. If they're going to do it on spec, they're going to want to make a profit on it. There may be a point, if you start doing these regularly, if you have a good lead for them, and you start doing these regularly, it may make sense for you to find a company that can do this kind of work, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to have money into these deals then. Now you're going to be a rehabber, and I don't have too many good things to say about that to begin with. Although
I'd rather go with something simple
right.
in the first. Thank you.
Right.
Great.
Right. By the way, rehabs can make you a lot of money. I've one of my guys that came through the process is doing about 40 of them a year right now. I've got another guy that's on track to do about 100 of them this year, and I'm making on average about $25,000 a piece. So you make a couple $3 million in doing rehabs. It's great money.
Wow.
But the risk is huge and the work is huge. You're going to be having no life. And the stress of working with contractors and all that stuff is no fun. So you always got to weigh out what's more important to me, making the money, you know, or my lifestyle. And don't forget about the lifestyle.
Hey, Joe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Yes.
Hey, Joe, this is Reggie. I have a question for today. Maybe I just sent it too late, or maybe it's still stuck in the filters or whatever, but my question was why you don't recommend putting the properties that you buy subject to into a trust?
I don't,
my email said maybe you do, and I may have just missed it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with trusts at all. As a matter of fact, I think they're a good idea. But I think that I don't talk about it very much because I think it gets people bogged down.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those... It's like, how should I set up my asset protection structure? You know, should I get an LLC and a S corporation or a C corporation? And do I need a limited partnership? And, you know, do I need a separate...
I had heard of it from Brian Ellis' training where he had mentioned just in terms of keeping it hidden from the lender in terms of... You know,
for the due-on-sale clause.
Right.
Yep.
That's it, as opposed to asset protection.
Yeah. I've never seen a property foreclosed upon by a due-on-sale clause.
Okay.
I've never seen it happen. I've seen it threatened a couple of times, but I've never seen it happen. It doesn't make sense.
I've heard, you know, here and there, but you're right. By the most part, most times it doesn't happen.
You've probably heard about it, but I bet you don't know anybody that's done it.
Right.
Have you ever met anybody that personally has happened to them?
I once.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anybody. I hear about it, but I usually hear about it by people that are trying to sell me something to protect me from it.
Right.
And I think it's possible. I think you have to be aware that it can happen. But I don't worry about it. Usually, especially with these types of deals, you got a property that's worth $150, you got you're buying it for $120 or $130, you got maybe $20,000 worth of equity. Does this make sense for the lender to foreclose on this property? You know, they're going to lose money if they do that. They're going to have a non-performing asset. Their credit rating is going to go take a ding. And they're going to be able to borrow less money because of it, and they're going to have the regulators down their throat more often because they're taking all these properties back. Now, on the other hand, if the property has only $10,000 mortgage on it, it's worth $150, then does it make sense for them to foreclose? Well, it might, because they have all this equity, and they could actually make money if they wanted to get into that business, if you talk to any banker, they're all going to tell you, I don't want to be in the real estate business. I'm in the lending business. I just want to get paid on my loans. But let's say that it did make sense for them to foreclose. At that point, they have to go through the foreclosure process. They have to file the notice of default. They have to tell you that we're going to foreclose. And then you got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months before they take it back, depending on what state you're in. And that means that you can go out, and if you only owe $10,000 on that property, what's the likelihood you're going to find somebody to loan you that money? It's very, very high. Because you can get 50% loan to value with any kind of credit.
Okay.
And
I had one last quick question. I don't want to monopolize.
I've been fading in and out because I have a I'm on a work conference call as well too in another room. When I came back in, I heard you mention a lease option memo combined with a purchase agreement or separate from a purchase agreement. The gentleman from Texas had mentioned something about that. I'm guessing he was referring to using Osm's
the for rent method. Yeah.
Landlord.
Right.
Is that what? And you said basically use a lease option memo.
Correct.
You're not really buying, but when you're tying up the property with the landlord, and a purchase agreement and a lease option with the tenant you're selling to, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. Just want to make sure I got clarification there. And I also heard you, and the other one I faded out, and this is a quick one also, I heard you mention a FedEx envelope. That was geared towards expires or foreclosures, basically.
That was for the people that are getting notice of defaults. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And when you're contacting them, you're not contacting them to ask them to buy the property. You're going to have to think of a good reason to contact them. And I think the best reason is to loan them money, to bring their mortgage current. You know, we're here to help people that are in a tough situation and loan them money against their property so that they can get their loan current and keep their property. Or if they want to sell their property, we often buy properties like this as well.
Right.
And all my mentor students have those letters, by the way.
Okay. With the seminar you just had this past weekend, were you guys discussing internet marketing? I found an old email from you, and I know you had mentioned internet marketing in one of those, and I don't know if that was discussed well, too, in terms of, not sure if it was internet related to real estate marketing.
Well,
what
you're thinking of is an email that I sent out that I was going to do an internet marketing, a day on internet marketing in July.
I see.
And I think I'm not going to do, what's that? I think I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do because we're doing so much internet marketing stuff with the real estate, and that's what we talked about on Saturday, and I think I'm going to expand on that in July because we're creating a lot of new systems that are internet-based. And
you're creating a lot of what somebody's voice data.
Yeah, somebody's talking in the background. We created a bunch of systems that work on the internet for real estate. And those are some of the things I talked about earlier on this call.
Emails and voicemail blasts.
Voicemail blasts, emails, using websites, those types of things. And I'm going to have something to roll out probably by July, but we're testing it right now, and the stuff is working phenomenally well. Just to bring in motivated sellers. It's incredible what it's doing.
Okay. Will that be part of the mentor package or not?
Yeah, that's in the mentor program.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to hold stuff back from you. I just don't have time on this call to go into all the stuff we covered over the whole weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, Joe. This is Rob in Castaic.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, I've got a potential deal where I've got this family up in Central California that she's behind 1 month and she's trying to sell. She's got a realtor that she signed up last weekend, but I'd started talking with her prior to that, so I fortunately have I'm excluded from anything with a through a realtor, and I really can't figure out a really good way to help her out here. I've pulled comps and their property is on 6.25 acres. All the other comps in the area, all the homes are sitting on, an acre or, maybe 1.25 acres. Do you have any great ideas?
And this is a friend that you're trying to help her sell her property?
No, actually, I don't know her. I just happened to, I'm an affiliate of WeBuyHousesForCash.com, and she sent me an email, and I responded. And
so she wants to sell her property. She's got a realtor, though. And they haven't been able to sell it at a specific price?
Right, right. The comps that I'm getting, the average is coming in at 249. She's looking for 310. And why she's looking a little bit more is because she's got, 5 acres more than everybody else that sold their homes.
Are the comps coming in on properties that are 1 acre or 6 acres?
No, they're all just like 1 acre. I think the most that was there was a one for 2 acres,
mm-hmm.
but that's the highest next to hers.
So she's got some value because of the land, right?
Right, right.
Okay. Well, tell her there's a couple things that she can do. One is if she sells through a real estate agent, the market will determine the value of the property. It's not set by the seller. It's not set by the real estate agent. There's not any special marketing that'll help, that'll make a property sell if it's overpriced. If it's overpriced, it will not sell.
Right.
So if she's not selling and she's and let me give you some quick statistics here. 1/3 of all the houses that go on the market in the national these are National Association of Realtors statistics. 1/3 of all the houses that go on the market do not sell; they become expired listings. Of the ones that do sell, they sell for 97% of asking price. So if they're priced right, they sell very close to asking. If they're not priced right, they don't sell at all. Nobody makes an offer on them. So if they and in the first 30 days, 20% of all the houses that are going to sell, sell. The second 30 days, only 7% sell. The third 30 days, only 7% sell. And I'm screwing up these statistics. The first 30 days, it's 40%. Second 30 days, it's 7%. The third 30 days, it's 7%. The fourth 30 days, it jumps up to 20%. Why does it jump up to 20%?
Because they more likely lower their price.
Exactly. On average, people lower the price after 90 days. So if that tells us that if it's not sold within, you know, 30 to 45 days at a specific price, it's probably not going to sell at that price. So if they're not at that price, then they need to lower their price. That takes us to threshold pricing. I believe that every $5,000 in properties under 250 is another threshold. Over 250, I think it's 10,000. But and it's because of the way agents pull up listings. If you pull up a property for your clients, they're going to say, "Well, pull me up everything between 150 and 200, or everything between 300 and 400." Nobody says, "Pull me up everything between 312 and 367." They don't stop on those odd numbers. They stop on round numbers. So in the search, you're going to be competing with all the properties that are in that $5,000 or $10,000 price range. So that's why you price it on an even number. So let's say you got a property that's worth about $100,000, you price it right at $100,000, not $99,900 because it sounds better, because you'll be pulled up in more searches at $100,000. And if it doesn't sell at $100,000, you're competing with all those properties between $95,000 and $100,000. People look at between 18 and 23 houses before they buy one. Then they pick the best one in their price range, usually the most expensive one, but always the best one that they like. So if you're not competing well with the properties in that $95,000 to $100,000 price range, then you have to compete with a new group of properties. And the only way to do that is to lower your price down to 95. If you lowered your price to 97, you're not competing anymore. You're still competing with the same group of properties. So you got to lower it down to 95 and compete with a new group of properties.
Okay. But, that all makes sense. But what I would like to do is, as an investor, try and help them out as well as, you know, get something on the deal.
That's where you want to take it. You want to lease option it for them.
Okay.
That's if they won't do it subject to, do a lease option, and say, look, I can get you full price for your property, but it'll take you a year, maybe 2 years, to get the money out. They'll have to pay you for. They'll rent it during that time, and they'll give you full price when they can qualify.
Yeah, I think the big thing though was that they were looking to try and get a few bucks out of it themselves.
Does she have good credit?
I don't know. I didn't do any credit search.
Just have her refinance, pull the money out.
But I don't know if she can do that because, like I said, she owes for her April payment.
Okay, so she's late on her payments.
Right.
So what's her other options if she doesn't get it sold?
She'd have to be foreclosed on.
Right. You know, what's the better option? It's not about what she wants. It's about what's going to be the best option for her.
Right, what they're able to do and to get out of it
If she's not getting if she's not getting any money out of that, she needs to find a way to get that thing solved. I would try to. What's she owe on it?
They've got a first of 141, and then I think they've got a second of only 8,000.
So they owe 149, and how much it worth?
She says 310. Or that's what they're asking is 310.
Okay, but 240 at 250 at the least, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, my guess is she can get more money for it if she does a lease option, you know, and she may end up getting that money. It may not appraise later on if that value is not there, but then it may. Why does she think it's worth 310? Because of the value, but who told her it was worth 310?
Well, you know what she did. She had an appraisal done on it. a few months ago, and they appraised it at 350.
Okay. And why did they appraise?
He lowered it down 40.
What was the purpose for the appraisal?
You know, I didn't even ask.
Okay. That determines whether or not the appraisal is accurate or not sometimes. Because
right.
If they appraised it for a purchase, somebody was buying it for that amount, that's one thing. If they did it for a refinance, it's a different story altogether, because a lot of times those guys are really optimistic.
Right.
And they're just making wild guesses. So you got to
right.
look at the comps then and see what the comps are. But the comps are telling you 250.
Exactly, exactly.
So she's probably off on her value, and some idiot appraisal, you know, idiot appraiser didn't know what he was doing. Or he was trying to be generous to her.
Now, then brings me to another question, because I was really wanting to do a lease option on this as well. But I heard you mention earlier to somebody else that you don't want to go to a landlord, and we as investors actually do a lease option with them. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, so I don't understand then, what are we doing then?
Are you going to live in this property? Is that what you
no,
want?
No,
okay. So what are you going to do with it?
I would just turn around and lease option it to somebody else.
Okay, and she's got equity in the property, right?
Right.
And how much could you sell it on a lease option for?
Say what, in 24 months?
No, right now. If somebody bought a lease option from you right now, what could they buy it for?
I don't know, maybe 280, 290.
Okay. Let's say it's, so you're thinking it's worth 250, they could buy it for 280, right?
Right.
So if you can get it for 250 on a what's called a multiple mortgage, so you're going to take the first subject to the existing loan, the first and the second, the 141 and the 88. So you got a first and a second, you're taking those both subject to the existing loan, to the existing mortgages. Or trust deeds, I guess, in your case. And then you'll put a third on there for the balance of the 250.
Okay.
Made out to her. You get the deed. It's your property now. She has a note. Now she's a lender. She never has to worry about that property again. She's a lender. It's a beautiful position for her.
Okay, so then she's not making anything off the deal at this point in time.
Correct, but she saves her equity from foreclosure.
Right.
And she gets her value. She gets the real value of the property.
Right.
Now, if she thinks it's worth 310 and you can't bring her down, then the only option is, can you sell it for more than 310?
Right.
And if you can sell it for 320, then I wouldn't take it subject to. What I would do is just have her be the lease option, you know, the landlord, and then go find a new lease option tenant to give you 10 grand and buy it for 310. For
right,
her.
And then I'm out of the deal.
Then you're out of the deal, yeah.
Okay.
If there's no equity, there's no reason for you to stay in. Although, there's tax benefits and some other things that could happen that are good. But a lot of times it makes sense just to move on.
Okay.
All right, good.
That's good, thanks.
Hello, can you hear me?
Who's that?
This is Judy from California, San Diego.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your first name.
Judy, S-U-D-I.
Okay, Judy.
I'm taking my baby steps, Joe.
If you can almost yell, I think it's the conference call thing is, if you could almost yell out what you're saying, that would help.
Okay, let me take my headset off. Is it better now?
A little bit, yes.
Okay. I'm taking my baby steps to learn how to do the lease option and get involved into the type of things that you're coaching. I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is, are you ever going to come to California?
Probably not until the crash.
I've heard that before.
That means I'm in the wrong market,
No, it's a good market. It's a good market. But when that crash happens, I'm going to do seminars out there.
It'd be better.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
I know.
It's going to be amazing when that market crashes.
So what are you expecting for that to happen?
I thought it was going to happen last year. So I'm amazed that it's held out this long.
Yeah, that's what we are thinking. It's still going on, and there's no signs of any crash at all. In fact, in some areas, the prices are still improving.
Well, that happened. It happened in California back in the late 80s the same way.
Right.
Texas went down. East Coast went down. And I was sitting on $20 million in California thinking, it's not going to happen here. They keep going up. It keeps going up. It keeps going up. Then it crashed almost overnight.
Oh, I see. So at this point, the best way to do a deal is a quick deal, to buy it and sell it as fast, if there is a good deal.
Not necessarily. If you get a deal and the equity goes away, I mean, what's your risk at any point if you do it the way I teach it?
You mean the lease option?
Yeah, if you buy it subject to land contract or contract for deed or multiple mortgage or lease option, if you buy it in any of those methods, what is your risk?
Yeah, pretty much nothing.
Exactly. So it doesn't hurt you to keep building those properties. They might keep going up in value. And if they do drop, they may not drop below what you owe on them. And if they do drop below what you owe on them, if you can keep a tenant in there, you'll get to keep the properties, and they'll eventually come back up again.
Right.
So it's not going to... You have a very good chance of surviving a crash.
Right. But the chances that when the market crashes, and let's say if I have a couple of lease option properties, and those who have leased it from me, they just decide to leave and not to continue with the lease, then what would be my situation?
Well, you have to try to put somebody else in there.
Okay.
And it's likely that you'll find somebody else that you can get in there, and that's the beauty of these lease options. Usually you make more money when somebody defaults.
Okay.
You know, you have to come in and support the mortgage there for a month, but then you find somebody else that comes in and they give you 5 times or 3 times or 2 times or whatever the mortgage amount, so you get your money back.
Okay.
And you make more money because they defaulted. Now, you don't want those people to default. You want them to succeed with this process, and you do everything you can to help them do it, but you don't wait for the mortgage. You get rid of them if they can't pay.
Okay.
And then you put somebody else into it. Now, let's say the worst case scenario happens. The values drop dramatically. You lose your tenant, and you can't find anybody else to go into that property.
Right.
First of all, is that property in your name?
No.
Mortgage? No, it's not.
No.
Do you have any money into that property?
No, I don't.
No, as a matter of fact, you made money on it already, haven't you?
Yes, I have some.
Number three, did you tell the seller when you closed the deal that something like this might happen, that it's a possibility? The answer is
I haven't.
The answer is yes, you did. If you didn't, you need to have told them. You need to make them aware of a due on sale clause. You need to make them aware that if it doesn't happen, that you're going to do your very best to keep it out of foreclosure.
Right.
But there's always a possibility that could fall. You know, you don't have control over everything.
Right.
And they need to understand that. You know, even the best case scenario, there's always possibilities that could go wrong.
Okay.
But they were heading for foreclosure anyway, in most cases. And you've at least, they have two choices. One is the possibility of foreclosure or the certainty of foreclosure. If they have the certainty of foreclosure, they're going down. Possibility is better than the certainty. You're going to help them out of that situation. You're going to do the best you can to protect them. The likelihood you're going to get in this situation is probably pretty slim, but it's possible. And if it happens and it goes down, you've lost no money, you've not damaged your credit, and you go and apologize to the seller and say, boy, I'm sorry, I didn't make it work. Would you like me to deed this back to you and see if there's something you can do with it?
Right. Oh, I see. Okay.
And do it with an apology.
Okay.
You know, people forget that apology part, and then it makes people mad or they ignore them, and that makes them mad. Whenever you have a problem, you try to solve the problem rather than ignoring the problem, and then apologize for your mistakes or the things that you're not able to accomplish, and people will forgive you most of the time.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
My other question for you, though, is what is the age criteria of the property for a lease option? I mean, is it still a good thing for a really old 30-35-year-old property, or it's better for me to watch for a younger property?
It doesn't matter. But you're looking only at the numbers.
Okay.
You know, I think it was on the earlier call today we were talking about... Oh, Connie, are you still on the call?
Yeah.
I'm going to use you as an example. Because she was talking about looking at properties that she didn't like them personally, $500,000-$600,000 properties in California on a cliff, no land, you know, not someplace that she would move into personally. It's not about the property. It's about the deal. Matter of fact, you may never see these properties. Sometimes we never even go to the properties. It doesn't matter what the property looks like. It doesn't matter where it's at. None of that stuff matters. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not location, location, location. It still is. That's what determines the value. But it doesn't matter to you, because it's either going to work, the deal's either going to work or the deal's not going to work. What matters to you is the deal. and the deal will determine whether or not it sells, and whether or not it sells will determine whether or not you make money. It doesn't determine whether or not you lose money, because you don't have any money into the deal.
What I meant by that is mainly for lease option. Let's say if the length of the lease option is 5 years or 4 years, so the property gets older and gets depreciated. Is that something that I need to consider when I do the lease option?
Well, the real estate is getting depreciated according to the IRS, but in most markets it's appreciating. So you have this depreciation on a property as a landlord that you can take against your income, and that's beautiful, because what's happening in reality in most markets is that the property is appreciating.
Right.
So even if it's an old properties appreciate usually just as much as new properties.
Right.
That's the neat thing about there's so many cool things about real estate, but that's one of the cool things about real estate. It keeps going up. Have you ever been in some of these old neighborhoods in Boston? I mean, properties that are 100 years old, 200 years old, they keep going up astronomical dollars.
Yeah, that's actually true. The house that I'm living now, it has appreciated 200%, and it's actually much older than, you know, the time that they bought it.
Right.
Right, yeah, that's actually true. And my last question is, when is going to be your next program, the workshop program?
When we're getting together with the mentor students?
Yes.
It's going to be in July, the middle of July. Let me see if I've got it on my calendar real quick. It's going to be... I'm going to Italy in June with the family. I believe I've got, I think it's on the 16th and 17th. I don't have it in my calendar for some reason, but it's on that zerodowninvesting.com site. If you scroll down, you'll find the dates of the events that are happening. Got one in July, one in September, and one in November.
Okay, so most likely we should get an email regarding that.
Yeah, I'll be sending out stuff.
Okay.
But you know, if you want to get into the mentor program, you don't have to wait until then to do it. You can start right now. And you can get into that, you can come to it, and actually it might be better if you started before you came, then you'd have a good grounding before you came.
Okay, then how can I do that?
You just call me up and tell me you want to do it.
Okay, the phone number that they have on your email?
317-598-1220.
Okay.
And you might, if you want to, you look at that zerodowninvesting.com site, because it tells you all about the program. And it tells you what's included and what it costs and what's, you know, special deals I'm doing and all that stuff.
Okay. I just ordered your book, and I haven't received it yet, but I couldn't come to your last program because I was booked for other things that I needed to do. But I definitely wanted to experience your program, definitely.
Well, we've got so many things going because we put the people, all the students are going on to teams, all of them that want to. We have teams to set up, so, you know, with my team leaders, which are my more advanced students, we've got these events that I'm doing every 2 months now, and we're bringing people, and I'm doing them mostly in Indianapolis because that's 5 minutes from my house, and it makes it easier for me to get all the equipment there and do this stuff. And We're doing incredible stuff there. We're buying properties as we speak there. I teach you how to do it. Plus, we're doing stuff that nobody else that I know of is doing. We keep coming up with new stuff. And one of the things, I had to apologize to the new people that were at the event, because I said, hey, I'm not going to be talking about all the grounding stuff, the basic stuff. I'm going to be going into just this. We don't have enough time today to cover all that stuff. So go back and listen to all the CDs and all the stuff that I've given you, and hopefully that'll help. But it makes sense to get started so you can get into the process, and then when you come, you'll be already running, you know, on your feet running.
Okay, yes, that makes sense, absolutely. Okay, then I'll give you a call, and I check through the website that you have, definitely.
Great.
Thank you so much, Joe.
You bet.
Joe, this is Helen. I've got a quick question. It's back to the basics.
Okay. Yes. Oh, but let me interrupt you just for a second. My phone is saying recharge, so if I pop out, it's not because I'm rude, it's because my phone died. And we are at the end of our hour and a half, but I'm going to go ahead, Helen.
Okay, you said a preferable thing is, of course, to buy it, the hierarchy, but if you're buying it on land contract, the example that you use in your contract, is that for just basically selling it and kind of flipping it? Because when I read through your land contract, it's so restrictive. Do we become a party to that and then assign it? Because it's saying that you need all kinds of special permission to assign the contract, and you have to be the sole person living in there, and you can't lease it.
Yeah, that contract was an example. Don't use that contract.
Okay, that would be something like if you were going to just kind of flip that contract.
I don't like land contracts at all, but it's better than not doing a deal. So if you, I'd prefer to see you do a multiple mortgage than a land contract.
Okay, well that won't fly with the guy. What if I do? The problem is if I do an OSM deal, but the guy needs me to manage the property because he's out of state.
Okay.
Set up a separate agreement.
Are you gonna make money by managing it?
I'm not gonna do it for free.
Absolutely. Only if you're selling it for more than he's selling it to you. So it doesn't hurt to do a land contract, but if he's got financial problems, he goes into bankruptcy, there's all sorts of nasty things that can happen. And if you're in New York, and there's some states where you can't even do land contracts. So.
Oh, that's the thing. He's in California, so
what matters is where the property's at.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter where he's at. So you won't have a problem doing a land contract in Indiana, but I would talk to him about that multiple mortgage a little bit more and see if you can sell him on that. If you can't do the land contract, get the best price you can, and then turn around and sell it for a lot more. You know, sell it for 10% over market value.
Okay. Well, I know a mortgage. They can get a mortgage. They'll mortgage property up to 166, and I've got him nailed at 152. But he wants a positive. He wants $1,300 a month for 2 years.
Oh, he wants. He doesn't want to cash out before then.
No, he's not really economically motivated. He's just
okay. Well, that's not really a problem. Just make sure that you're getting. How much can you rent it for?
I'm hoping at least $1,500 a month.
Okay, so you make $200 plus you get the tax benefits plus you can sell it for how much over what he's buying, selling it to you?
He's selling it to me for $152.5.
And it's worth?
It could probably handle a 166 mortgage. That's what our mortgage guy said.
So go to 175, because in a year it'll the value will go up enough to do that. So you go to one.
Indianapolis?
Yeah. And they'll be able to stretch that thing a little bit. Mortgages are, appraisals are flexible by about 10%. And worst case scenario, if they can't do it, then just lower the price when he finally gets it refinanced.
Okay, but then do I have to, like, actually, my name has to be on that land contract?
Yes, but your name would be on the deed either, as well. If you were doing it, if you were buying the property, your name would be on the deed. If you're
okay, now if I'm buying it on land contract and selling it on lease option, but if I were just selling it on a land contract, do I still have to be on that land contract?
Yeah, but you can put some verbiage in there that assigns it and transfers your interest and your liability.
Okay, that's the thing, is I'm trying to avoid all kinds of liability.
Okay. Well, do it that way. Have some verbiage put in there. Talk to an attorney to figure out what the best way to word it is, to transfer. You know that this land contract is assignable by a buyer, upon assigning will be, we'll transfer all interest and liability to seller. As long as he accepts that, then you're fine. I'd prefer to see you just do it as a put the purchase agreement together for a land contract. Find somebody to buy the purchase agreement from you. Assign the purchase agreement. And then have the land contract created in the name of the new buyer. That'd be the simple.
Well, that would be the ideal situation. But there again, is that protecting the owner as much as one of your leases?
The lease is better for the owner. because he can evict them. Otherwise, he's going to have to foreclose. He's better off if he just does a lease. But if he's selling it to you, he's got to get it from you too. I mean, you're going to take it, so he's not taking that much less of a risk.
Okay. Well, can we kind of expand on Ozum's thing and go with like a management contract, a property management contract?
No, you can't manage a property for him without a license.
Okay.
You know, you could work for him as an employee and set it up a little differently that way. Then you could do it. And I know Nina's set some of those up with her people. So just make sure you do it right. Talk to an attorney to make sure that's done right. You can't represent him as his land, you know, property management. You got to be careful how you word it.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
Okay, good luck with it. All righty. Well, I think our time's up today, but thanks a lot, everybody, for coming on. If you guys are interested in the mentor program, like I was saying earlier, you know, this thing is a cool program. We get together every couple months with the whole group. It's a pretty small group. We were only like 25 or 30 of us last time. Usually it's around 40 or 50 of us to get together. And we go through this process together. We learn a lot of new ideas. We're always testing new things. We work together as teams. We do deals together. You know, there's a lot of cool things that come out of this. Plus, I get on a conference call every other week and answer all your questions and work as your mentor and help you through this process. And I also have a ton of materials that I give you. And it's not cheap. I mean, I think it's an expensive process. But since you guys are in the cash flow membership, you get 30% off, so you get a discount there. So go, if you're interested in finding out more about it, go to that zerodowninvesting.com. Spell it out, Z-E-R-O, downinvesting.com. And it's like a 40-page letter that it tells. I had to just keep writing to tell you all the stuff that's included. So there's a lot of junk there. And it's really good stuff, and I think it's really helping a lot of people get where they want to go with this stuff. And I think that you probably got the feeling from that already, because there were a few of them that were on this call. We'll probably do another cash flow call like this in probably another 3 months, and you guys are welcome to come on that. There's a lot of good stuff that are coming out of the cash flow newsletters as well, and I've heard a lot of good stories that are coming out of that as well. So good to have you guys in that program, if you have any questions that you'd like me to answer in the cash flow newsletter, you can email them to me, and I'll address them in the newsletter. All righty. Well, thanks a lot, everybody. I will talk to you next time.
Hey, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.